Well, Jody Jeschkeit-Hagen, thank you so much for joining us on Deep Roots Radio. How did you get started in seed saving?
I started planting seeds when I was a young girl in the inner city here in South Minneapolis. And I never really understood what a seed really was. It's a dormant living being that's just sleeping and waiting for the right triggers, right human and environmental triggers. When I was 24, I believe, I started working at my first seed farm in New Mexico, Seeds of Change. And from that point on, once understanding the intricate human-plant relationship with seeds, I decided to dive deeper. And since then, I've worked at a couple of different seed farms, both family-owned, nonprofit, as well as for-profit. And I did my graduate work looking at how to recreate local seed systems. And then I moved back to the Twin Cities where I'm from to teach about that, both at the basic level as well as the breeder level in the last 4 years. So just like everyone used to always grow their own vegetables, everyone used to save seed. I don't believe that there is a green thumb in seed saving, nor do I believe there's one in gardening. It just takes some time to build confidence and to find what you love, what each of us loves. Because then you devote time to helping it grow. So seed saving does not have to be complicated. There's really easy crops. There's some crops that are a little bit trickier, but it just takes exploring and doing it.
So. All right. Now, before we get into some of the technicalities, let me ask you this. Is it too late for people to save seeds right now in the fall?
No, it's a perfect time.
All right. So you can actually apply this to this year's crop still.
Yeah, and especially depending on what microclimate you're in. I'm walking down the block as we speak, and there's plenty of seeds I could pluck off different plants right now that are ready to be saved for the season.
Well, you know, I'll have to admit, saving seeds is something that began to interest me, oh, jeepers, it's got to be 25 years ago, mm-hmm. when I joined an organization called the Seed Savers Exchange. And that's a really big nonprofit collaboration among gardeners and some farmers from all over the United States and even some foreign countries. And the mission there is to really save heritage seeds. Mm-hmm. So I started becoming interested back then, and I got practiced in just doing a couple of seeds, let's say lettuces. I focused on a couple of lettuces and two or three tomatoes, and that's kind of where I focused my efforts. But is there a limit to the type of seeds that anybody can save? I mean, is it only lettuces and tomatoes?
There's no limit. I mean, we can save beans. We can save different types of grains. We can save potato seed. Yes, potatoes do produce seed. We can save peanuts. You know, we can
wow.
save so many things that come from seed that will reproduce themselves the next year into edibles that we can eat. So there's no limit. The only limit is maybe what types of microclimates we can produce here in the north, because some crops need longer time to produce a seed. So you may need to overwinter them or have a greenhouse or cold frame or something like that.
All right. Well, if you're just starting out, let's say you are a fairly new gardener and you want to try saving a fairly easy seed or two, as you begin, what would be a couple that you would suggest?
Well, you listed two that are pretty darn easy and pretty good to save, tomatoes and lettuce. On top of those two, there are also beans are really easy, peas mm-hmm. are really easy, as well as marigolds and zinnias and really like mostly any aster family. Sunflowers are another great beginner, especially for kids, because the seed looks just like the one thing we eat, and it also looks exactly like what we plant, and it's a pretty quick producer. So,
well, let me
ask one to start with.
Let me ask you this too. Many of us, let's say we've got a garden right now, and it's the end of the season, and we want to try saving a couple of seeds. Can you give us some cautions, however, because many of us sometimes plant hybrid seeds. Now, will those be good to save or not?
So a couple of things to keep in mind when you're starting your seed saving endeavor. The first one is, where are you getting your seed from and what kind of seed is it? So you bring up the point of hybrid seeds. Now, we have open pollinated seeds, which are how nature produces. And nature also, it's when seeds have a fairly stable trait. So if I planted a red tomato and it's open pollinated, coming from an open pollinated company or my neighbor who let it naturally pollinate, I will plant it the next year and it will become a red tomato again. It will have the genetic makeup the same as it had the previous year. Whereas a hybrid seed, and that's not necessarily bad, it just means that two parents were used, so making a hybrid crop, like a green pepper and a red pepper, making a purple pepper. And I'd plant the seeds from the purple pepper, but I will not get a purple pepper the next year. So planting a hybrid seed, you're not going to get the same offspring as you did originally from the original planting. So you have to be aware that you're working with a lot more genetic variables, and it will take a really pretty experienced seed saver to make that hybrid seed come out to be the same purple seed that you originally started with.
Right.
It takes up to 7 to 10 years of selecting certain plants and certain crosses. And that gets a little bit more into like genetics and things that we don't necessarily need to worry about as basic seed savers, but it's something to be aware of when you're purchasing that seed. If it's a hybrid, you don't want to use that as your first seed to start.
Great. So as our listeners are looking at their gardens, let's say they're listening to our show and they're looking out at the garden, maybe a thing to advise them is look for a vegetable or a fruit where you only had one kind or one variety of that fruit growing in your garden and that it was not a hybrid to begin with.
Correct. And you want to, right, if you have, if you're growing 6 different kinds of tomatoes really close together, you might end up mixing those tomatoes up within the seed world. So you want to be able to really simplify what you're doing. So when you're growing a particular seed crop out, so you can really understand and see that it maintains its true to typeness, maintains its original characters.
Right.
So really, it's about simplifying a little piece of the garden, a little container, and making sure you can truly understand that crop like it's your sister or your brother.
Ah, okay. So let me ask you, I'm a gardener. What are some of the things I should think about first, and what are some of the steps I should take?
I brought up a couple when you're beginning. Make sure you know what type of seed you're obtaining, whether you've been gifted it or you're going to buy it. Also, make sure you know if it is primarily a selfer or if it's a crosser. Selfers mean they're plants that self-pollinate. And crossers mean they need to have other flowering plants around them to be able to produce seed. Because mm-hmm. if you have something, say, like spinach, and you only have a couple of spinach plants, they could all be female. They're crossers. They need to have males to be able to produce seed.
Ah.
Anyway, the point is know what kind of pollination your crop needs in order to produce seed. Let's see, what else would I suggest? Also know how big your plant is going to get when it needs to produce seed. Sometimes plants that we eat don't need to get very big, like carrots, and we just eat the roots. However, if we're growing those for seed, they can get up to like 6 feet tall. So we need to make sure we have space for the seed itself to grow, and you need to make sure that your gardening space can accommodate. Also, make sure if you're growing something that requires a shady area or hot, sunny area that you have, that you can provide for the particular crop's climatic favorabilities. Those are some things that I suggest being aware of.
Mm-hmm.
Also, make sure that you're going to be around when the seed is ready.
Because
if you miss harvesting the seed, there's plenty of other things in this world that probably want to eat it, or there's soil that wants to bury it right away. So you have to catch it before some aspect of nature does. Make sure you're around, because those end of summer travel plans, as well as fall travel plans, or work plans can get in the way of actually harvesting all of that hard work that you put out there to get that seed. So,
you know, that makes an awful lot of sense. So let's say that you've got tomatoes. You've got them right there. You're there at the right time. You've got the right variety. What do you do now?
Well, tomatoes are special because not only can we harvest the seed, we can still eat the flesh of the fruit. Mm. Some crops, when you're saving the seed, you can't eat it, like corn. If we eat it, we won't have seed because we eat the seed. Makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
But tomatoes, you can, it's a wet seed crop, so you're going to need to make sure that you you squeeze out all the seeds into a cup and make sure that the seeds ferment for 3 to 5 days, which is where natural mold grows and eats away the little gelatinous sac that's around each of those seeds so that doesn't cause mold when you're storing your seeds over the winter.
Mm.
You, after those 3 to 5 days, and you're, you know, on the side, you're also making your tomato sauce, right? Or you're canning your tomatoes for other things in the winter. But you rinse those seeds off, let them dry for a week, and then properly store and label them. There's something that I didn't say, but for any seed saver, whether you're a beginner or an expert, I cannot emphasize enough how much a seed journal or some type of seed story is so important to document. Because hopefully someone is going to inherit your seeds either by gift or by legacy. And those notes that each of us can take about what that seed went through and how it came to reproduce are priceless, especially during this age when we have dramatic changes in our climate from season to season. We want to know what kind of resiliency each of those seed crops had or has in it.
You know, I think people might be surprised to know that seed plants can, you know, not seed plants, but plants do acclimate to different types of microclimates. And mm-hmm. there can be hundreds of varieties of a rice plant or a corn plant if they're allowed to acclimate over a long enough period of time so that they really do better in certain places than they do in others. Is that something that you've also kind of come across?
I have come across it, and not so much as a direct seed saver because I'm still fairly young. I think it takes a lifetime to become a reader of your particular seed crop. However, I've noticed from different regions, when you buy seed from different companies or are gifted, they might not do so well with the drastic Minnesota and Midwestern temperatures or the heavy inundations in the spring that we've been having. So adaptability of the seed is key, and you're right. Like, the only reason we have the biodiversity we have today, the agricultural biodiversity we have, is because people in different regions, in deserts, in mountainous areas, in flatlands and prairies, were doing experimentation through the 10,000 years that we've been doing agriculture, and they were saving different seeds for different things, for colors and textures. And that's our inheritance. That's our rich inheritance. And that's why I've gotten involved in seed saving, because it's the only way to preserve as well as continue that biodiversity within seeds and thus food is to be able to read those traits and to save them and pass them on.
How important is seed saving to sustainable agriculture, do you think?
In my mind, it's the foundation. There is no sustainable food, sustainable egg, nor local food without local sustainable seed production. Organic seed production, if all the conventional farms turn to look for organic seed sources, there are not enough organic seed farmers out there to be able to supply all the farmers that would need it. Mm. We have largely a lot of the patent rights and stuff have taken rights away from growing certain crops out there. But it's essential. And I think it's the quiet things that leave our communities, whether it's a species or a skill set, that we don't know we've lost it until we need it again. And seed saving is one of those things. Every class I took in college and graduate school talked about this new age of the food system and how we need to have it sustainable. And rarely did I hear the seed mentioned.
Hmm.
It's the quiet, tiny things that get ignored a lot. It allows for a particular being or seed to have resiliency when it encounters adversity. To be able to have a huge pot of skills or traits or tools to pick from when encountering a hardship, and to be able to still produce through that hardship is so important. Because if we don't have that buoyancy, that huge cushion to be able to adapt to the changes that we're always having in our dynamic world we live in, whether it's a seed or a person, we can't continue to grow. We can't continue to survive. Biodiversity is the foundation of life itself on the planet. So biodiversity within seed, within the seed world, which is produces, I think, about 60 to 70% of the food we eat, whatever culture you're from across the world, like if we didn't have that diversity, our chances for survival like quickly plummet. Mm. So if you don't love plants or anything, but hopefully you still love your own life, there's a huge reason to start preserving and enhancing the biodiversity of seeds that we've inherited.
Well, thank you so much, Jody. This is you've given us a good reason for it and some steps on how to start saving seed. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you so much. Have a wonderful fall weekend.